Proverbs chapter 1, and we'll begin reading in verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the naive, to the youth, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear an increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. To understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. I've often made the comment here, a wise man will hear an increase in learning, and made the notation that there is no age limit on that. And sometimes people say, well, Pastor, can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, Proverbs doesn't know anything about that, right? A wise man all the days of his life will hear an increase in learning. And may our Lord grant us that all the days of our life. So Proverbs 27, and our first question comes from verse 8. As you're aware, we have been journeying through the book of Proverbs, taking probably on average a couple of chapters on a midweek service. You and us as a church reading these chapters together, sending in questions, asking for explanation, asking for application, whatever of the passages, and then I select two, three, or four, depending on the length of the answers, to go through here. We're almost at the end of this book. And so next Wednesday, Lord willing, we'll do chapters 28 and 29. And then we'll have a break for Thanksgiving. And then after that, we'll do chapters 30 and 31. So our first is chapter 27, verse 8. Like a bird that wanders from her nest, so is a man who wanders from his home. And the question here is, the person wrote, this sounds like people should not move. I thought perhaps that maybe this is spiritual, that you should move from your sound beliefs. But they looked up home, and it said that the Hebrew's definition was place, and that is accurate. And seems to remove her spiritual application. So what is this verse teaching? And of course you have parallels here, but the bird here is referring to a young baby bird. Okay? And the word wanders is really means to flee from or to escape from. So here what you have is a young bird that escapes from, and note the next two words there. The nest, right? That's the nest that the mother has made. It's the nest that is the bird's home. And it is her nest. Okay, so we are definitely talking about a very young bird, perhaps a baby bird, right? That's in the nest of her mother. And so like a bird that wanders from her nest, so is a man. And this word for man is the word ish, so it is the word for man himself. Is a man who wanders or escapes or flees from his place. And most translations have the word home there. And the reason why they use the word home is because of the parallel with what in the verse? Nest. Parallel with the word nest. Okay, so a nest is a young bird's home, right? And so here you have the parallel. You got a young bird to a man. You have the same Hebrew word, wanders from in both halves, which means to escape or to flee out of. And then you got the parallel between nest and the place there. And so my understanding of this runs along these lines. A young bird that leaves the security, provision and protection of its nest prematurely. Exposes itself to danger, does it not? Okay, you probably have seen occasions I have in my yard, not in my present yard, but in previous yards, of baby birds that fell out of the nest. And they were dead. They were there on the ground. And so, again, a young bird that leaves the security, the provision, the mother bird's feeding the bird, right? The provision, the protection of its nest prematurely exposes itself to dangers, to lack, and to, in many cases, death itself, because now animals can get to that young bird. Okay? So, in likewise, a man or a woman who desires to escape from their parents, or to escape from their family, or to escape from their home, and I'm going to use the word prematurely, right? In other words, without the blessing of the family, the parents, they too expose themselves to dangers, do they not? And this is one reason why the world is always encouraging your children to leave the security of their parents. They'll say things like this, well, you're old enough to make your own decisions. Or, as one of our fifth graders was exposed in their public schools, the teacher said, you don't always have to listen to what your parents say. Is that dangerous? That is dangerous. And, you know, I have run across many teenagers who have told me this, almost a quote, I can't wait till I get out of this house. That's a dangerous statement, is it not? That is really exposing that that young person is like this young bird that escapes out of the security and the provision of a home prematurely because they can't stand to be there. And in many cases, they end up exposing themselves to many hurtful dangers and to lack when they don't need that lack, right? You remember the son who left the father and lived among the pigs. Said, Dad, give me my inheritance. Let me go. And he wasted his inheritance on riotous living. And where did he have lack? He had lack, did he not? Did he not expose himself to dangers? He did. And then finally, he comes to his senses and says, why, like a young bird, would I want to escape my father's house? There is provision there. And he comes back, and of course the Father receives him, and so the Lord does for us, right? When a young person, a man or a woman, desires to escape their parents or to escape their family or their home, can expose themselves. Now, I said prematurely, and the world has ideas on what that means, but I would say this. Whether it's premature or not will depend upon the child. Some children are very, very mature at 18, 19, 20. Right? Some children are not. And I'm kind of reminded here as we go through here about a young man who wanted to marry one of Jonathan Edwards' daughters. And he went to Jonathan Edwards and said, I'd like to have the hand of your daughter. And Dad said, no. And the young man pled. He said, I love your daughter. I'll take care of her. And Jonathan Edwards said, called the guy's name and said, there are some people like the Lord that can live with my daughter. What was he saying? Daughter's not ready for what? not ready for marriage, okay? So whether they're mature or not, it's going to depend upon the child. And so, like a bird that wanders from her nest, so is a man or a woman or a boy or a girl who desires to escape from his home prematurely. They're still too young for that. All right? Proverbs 27 and verse 12. A prudent man sees the evil and hides himself. The naive proceed and pay the penalty. And when I got this, I was reminded that we've already seen this proverb. Go back to Proverbs 22 and look at verse 3. The prudent sees the evil and hides himself, but the naive go on and are punished for it. Okay, now the difference is, in Proverbs 27, verse 12, everything's the same, except here you have paid the penalty. And in Proverbs 22 and verse 3, you have punished for it. Okay, so the proverb is different here, and the person that asked the question just asked, can you give more light about this passage? And I kind of smiled when I read it, because it was the light of this passage that brought my wife and I back from Israel when the first Gulf War came in. And it was this passage that guided our steps to return to the United States instead of staying there. Now, it could have been God's will for to stay there. Okay, there would have been nothing evil about that. Okay, but in conjunction with our pastor, in conjunction with our mission board, and in conjunction with the verse, that was the verse that brought us back, and that was the verse that, as it were, swept me into being a pastor versus missionary. So I did have to smile when I read that. What is the light of this passage? Well, when it comes to our walk, a man of wisdom has eyes in his head. In other words, a man of wisdom can see what is coming. In many cases, he can see what is coming down the road. Okay? A prudent man, a man of skill, a wise man, sees the calamity, he sees the evil, and he does what? He hides himself. Okay, but the naive, that is a man without skill, a man without wisdom, proceed and then pay the penalty of that calamity. So when it comes to our walk, a man of wisdom can foresee the calamity that's coming and shelters himself from the calamity. In other words, there's a hurricane, a tropical storm right now in the Gulf. And it has gone down the Florida Gulf on the west side. And they're predicting that it's going to take a right and cut right across Florida and head to the right half of Georgia. Okay. Would you call that a calamity? Okay, well, a wise person would see that calamity and take steps to shelter themselves, okay, from that. But the naive, they just pass on and they pay the penalty. A man who is lacking wisdom will either deny the calamity or excuse the calamity away or not even see that the calamity is coming. And I've been reading through the book of Genesis, and you'll recall that Lot went to his sons-in-law and said, "The Lord is going to destroy the city." And they thought he was joking. Right? They couldn't see because they weren't believing people. And so a person lacking wisdom, you may bring the calamity to their attention. They just say, "Nah, that'll never happen." Or they could say, "Well, I can handle it." Okay. Or they'll just excuse it away, or they'll just laugh at you. Okay. And the end result of that person is whatever the suffering that would come into their lives as a result of that calamity. Okay. And I've heard it expressed this way from people when I have had opportunity to give them warning or in counseling sessions with people who are experiencing difficulties. And I've said to them, if you go down this path, this is what is going to happen. And I'll tell you what, I'm almost quoting, that will never happen to me. And you know what happened? It happened. Now here's the thing. It didn't happen the next day. It might have been 15 years later. But it came. And that's really one of our issues. How many times has a young person been warned not to do something? And they said, "Dah, you're just worrying too much. That'll never happen to me. If it does, I can handle it. I'm strong." And 10, 15 years, 5 years, 20 years down the road, they're in the exact nest that you warned them about. That does happen, does it not? Now, the sad thing about that is that when it does happen like that, they hardly ever remember why it happened. That it was 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years ago when they made that decision. So, a prudent man, a man of skill, who has eyes in his head, will see the evil, that is the calamity, and he will take steps to shelter himself from the devastation of the calamity. And now, folks, sometimes, I did think about this with this verse, sometimes you foresee the calamity, but it's God's will for you to go through it. And I'm thinking about our Lord. Did he know the cross was coming? But it was God's will for him to go across that. Okay. And so we're talking about a calamity that's a result of wrong decisions. A calamity that's something you see coming down the pipe. Do you see any potential calamities coming from this, the results of our political situation? Well, I've thought about many. And my wife will testify. I said to her, I don't know how to prepare our people other than what we're already doing. But the point is, I was thinking, how can I help all of us shelter ourselves in the midst of this? And so, that wise man will come. All right, thirdly, Proverbs 27, verse 14. I knew that didn't look like the verse because I'm in chapter 23. Proverbs 27, verse 14. He who blesses his friend with a loud voice early in the morning, it will be reckoned a curse to him. Okay. And the key thing here, I think, that will help us understand is this phrase, early in the morning. The phrase means rising up early in the morning. So, to understand this, what he's saying is, what was intended as a blessing becomes a what? A curse. Okay? So a blessing that is loud and untimely is counted as a curse. And I'm going to expand it a little bit more. It's not just the content of your speech. What's the content of this person's speech? Blessing. It's not just the content, it's the timing. And it's the volume. Okay. It's the timing early in the morning, and it's the volume. Loud voice that makes a blessing a blessing. And I thought, how can I illustrate this? So, I'm going to illustrate this way. I'm going to make up an illustration. I would never do this. Okay, but I'm going to make up an illustration. Usually, my wife, on the days that she has to work, the night before, she goes to bed very early. And she doesn't think it's early, but it would be early if I went to bed at that time. And so, let's say she goes to bed at that appointed time, and I'm in the den, I'm doing things, and all of a sudden I get to thinking, my wife is a real blessing. I mean, I am so thankful that the Lord has given my wife to me. Now, if you're married, you fall faults like this periodically. You just think, what a blessing my spouse is. And so you start thinking, you know, they do this for me, and they do this, and they love me, and they're kind to me, and when I sin, they bear it. You know, you start thinking about all this, and your heart's just kind of getting bubbly. You know, and you're pumped up about this. And the time kind of goes by. And, you know, you get on your knees and you thank the Lord. And, you know, you're just saying, wow, what a gift my wife is. And I go to bed. And all of a sudden I wake up in the middle of the night, which does happen. And I think, first off, what a blessing my wife is. So it's 4 a.m. in the morning. I can't control it anymore. So I get over and I shake her up. I say, get up, get up. What's the matter? I just want you to know you are such a blessing. And I go into with, you know, very loud terms, you know, you love me and you're kind and you take care of me and you make food and you, you know, you just go through all this. You know what my wife's doing? I've never done this, but I can imagine. She's like... Okay, now am I blessing her? Yes or no?
Yes.
Am I thankful?
Yes.
Sure. Was it the right time?
No.
No. Okay. I thought about using my brother going over to his house, going outside the windowsill. Greg, this is Pastor. I just want you to know we had a great time yesterday in the garage. It was such a blessing to be there and work. You're such a great deacon. And what happens is this. You hear it and you say, it's a blessing. And then you start thinking, it's 4 a.m. in the morning. And the more you think about it, you're more perturbed that it's 4 a.m. in the morning. And the blessing diminishes in your mind, right? And it becomes a curse in the sense it's not a good thing. Okay? Now that's an extreme illustration. And I can assure you I would never do that to my wife. Okay, with that, because that would really test her being filled with the Spirit after being woke up at 4 a.m. in the morning. But does everybody understand that? That there is a time to share that. Okay? A person's crying. They're in sorrow. They're in deep pain. You know, and all of a sudden you just come up and start telling them what a blessing it is. It's not the appropriate time to do that, right? And I'll just give you a hint. If you really have one of those moments and it's 4 a.m. in the morning, write a card. Just write down all your bubbly stuff in a card. Put it on, you know, in the devotional shed. You know, put it in there. And then let them read it. Then it'll be a blessing. Okay? But not at 4 a.m. in the morning. Okay? Does that help? I hope that helps. All right. Last one. Proverbs 27, verse 21. The crucible is for silver, and the furnace for gold. And each is tested by the praise accorded to him. Now, we've already seen this passage. Okay? Go back to Proverbs 17 and look at verse 3. The refining pot is for silver, and the furnace for gold. Now, what's different in Proverbs 17 and verse 3? But the Lord tests hearts. Here in Proverbs 27, in verse 21, it says, and each is tested by the praise accorded him. Now, there's various, there's various understandings of this passage. Let me give you a couple that I do not think is the right answer. Some people hold that what the text in the Hebrew is saying is that a man's character is revealed by what they praise. And I think in a sense that's true, right? What you hear people praise reveals something about them. Yes? Okay. But it's also true that people can praise and hide their true inner person about the situation. So I don't think that's what the text is saying. The second thing that I don't think the text is saying, but many people teach, it goes along these lines. A man's reputation is seen as other people examine and evaluate him and give him praise for his deeds. Okay. And I do think that's true. I do think that we look at the behavior of people, do we not? Okay, and we examine them, and if their deeds are good, then we have a tendency to give them praise, right? Speak well of them. Okay. I don't think that's what this passage is saying, although the previous two understandings do have an element of truth to it. And the reason why I don't is because I don't think either one of those two understandings give the first half of the verse the weight that it deserves. The crucible is for silver and the furnace for gold. That's real testing, isn't it? Okay? And so I think that what the passage is teaching is that the greatest test that we have, and I'm using greatest not as in the ultimate or the only, but one of the greatest tests that a human being has is how they handle praise. How they handle praise. Praise can be a fiery trial. Charles Haddon Spurgeon, when he first went to Metropolitan Tabernacle, which was New Park Street Church at that time, really prayed a lot because he received a lot of praise for his preaching, for the way his church was growing, for the impact of his ministries that was having in that area. many men that were other men in the ministry wrote glowing reviews and reports of his ministry. And in his autobiography, he agonized about the fact of all this praise that was coming his way. And his concern was that he would not be exalted in his own mind. In other words, all that praise, which was okay, right? Nothing wrong with praise, ended up being a fiery trial for that man. It was a test for him, was it not? And later on, he said one of the greatest blessings that ever came in his ministry was all the criticism that ended up coming up about it, because it just helped him. Okay? It also propagated his ministries around. So I think one of the greatest tests in a person's life, especially a Christian's life, is how we handle praise. Praise can be a fiery trial because we have a sinful nature whose propensity is to seek the praise of people. Praise is like an alcoholic drink. You hear praise about you, does it make you feel good? Yes or no? Yeah. Sure. Okay. you drink enough of it, you're going to seek out the drink. And and brethren, pastors and leaders are not the only people that are tested by praise. God's people are tested by praise. Now, what I don't want you to do is say, oh, well, since people are being tested by praise, I will never praise them. Some people, not using the word praise, some people have actually told me that. And I want to remind you of Romans 13:7, to give honor to whom honor is due. Right? Folks, our sinful nature can take just about everything that's of God and twist it. Galatians 6:6 says that those who are taught, this is probably referring to material provision, but those who are taught are to share all good things with the one who has taught them. So would it be appropriate for you to say, Pastor, that message really helped me? Yes or no? Sure. Could my sinful nature use that for evil? Sure. It is a test. So gratitude, thanksgiving, praise that's expressed to someone else is not in and of itself wrong. But just be aware that it may end up being a test for